Welcome to the FinTech Scaly Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Ned Phillips from Bamboo, who's a CEO and founder. Prior to joining Bamboo, Ned has had a stellar career in financial services. He's worked in the fintech and financial services space since 1999. So he knows the market pretty well and knows the Asian market pretty well. So we're really stoked to have him on the show today. Some of his stints has included a CEO at Chai East, and he's also founded and run his own consulting business. So Ned, welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I think when you said he was been since 1999, that makes him, and I thought you were going to say old, but you said experience. So I'll take that.
Yeah, nice. Great to have you. And I'm really, really looking forward to going down into the detail today. You're our first Asian guest. So congratulations on that. Let's kick it off. What I'd like to do is jump into the time machine and maybe go back a few steps so we can give our listeners a bit of insights as to who you are and why Bamboo. So to kick that off, could you sort of run through the early part of your career and maybe focus on how that has helped you be a success at Bamboo?
I think the key answer is I'm a salesman. So I'm 54. I left uni when I was 21. So in theory, I've been working for 33 years. And I think all of us, when we're 21, if we go and wanted to do, maybe there's some 21-year-olds who did, but I think I don't think I knew I wanted to be a salesman. I just couldn't figure what else. And I landed a job as a salesman, which is basically just talking.
Yeah.
And I figured I liked talking. And I kind of went okay in my first job. Embarrassingly, my job was selling fertilizer, garden fertilizer on the phone. And essentially, garden fertilizer is animal manure. So you could say I was talking, you know what. And that turned out to be my career for the next 30 years. I got promoted in about 2 months to general manager of selling shit, if I may say that, garden fertilizer. And maybe that kind of has some kind of ring to the rest of my career. But I think, you know, I moved to Asia very luckily in the early 90s, got a job selling advertising. Then I worked in a financial kind of magazine, and I met some people who worked in broking and stockbroking. And one of them said, would you like a job in stockbroking? I remember thinking, well, that sounds good. I did do economics at university. Yeah. And that kind of led to my kind of career in fintech. I ended up at E-Trade and kind of to where we are, fast forward to where we are today.
Awesome. I like this story. I'm not, I don't think at any time I'm going to say that you are talking the proverbial manure today, because there's going to be some good insights, right? And what was the, you know, you've worked as a CEO, you've also founded a consulting business. So what was the motivation to sort of set up a fintech, set up Bamboo later down the line?
Yeah, like when I joined E-Trade, so for those of you who are young, E-Trade was Robin Hood before Robin Hood was Robin Hood. And for those of you who are old, you know what E-Trade is. And I was lucky enough to join E-Trade in the 90s. And I think from that side, you could say I've been in fintech over 20 years, right? Because E-Trade was online stock trading. You know, it wasn't called that. But I think that's what really led me towards starting up my own fintech. I worked there for a long time, really enjoyed it. I then worked in kind of building new stock exchanges. So these alternative stock exchange, Chai East, as you mentioned. So I realized I always worked in tech. I'm not a real tech guy, but I know enough to sell it. And I think that's kind of an interesting combo. You know, I'm not a tech guy, but, you know, I can spell API and it helps me. You know, the phrase in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And the people I sell tech to aren't real tech people. They're business people. So I know enough to sound like I know it. Of course, if I'm in a room full of tech people, I keep my mouth shut because I would give myself the game away. But I had a lucky break when I was mid-40s, made a decent amount of cash and thought I could retire. And I moved to Bali for a year and it was very nice, but I was a bit bored. And the real spark was I saw these 25-year-olds building their own fintechs. And I had lunch with a gentleman, and if you're listening, and if you're not, it doesn't matter, Ludovic Blanquet, who worked at a company called Mysis. And we're having lunch, and I wasn't doing much. He's like, Ned, you know more. He said, Ned, you're a fintech guy. I'm like, am I? Honestly, like, I know it sounds ludicrous, but I always thought I was a sales guy. It's like, no, Ned, you're a fintech guy. And honestly, like, I left there, I was like, maybe I should start a fintech. And you know, a combination of everything, but definitely the lunch with Ludovic gave me a little bit of, let's have a go. And I met my co-founder, Aki, and honestly, that's how it started.
And tell me a bit more about their lunch. I mean, what else sparks you into action?
The place was called Dapalo. It was on Club Street in Singapore. I don't remember what I had, but I think Ludovic had a salad because he was trying to be healthy and he made me feel bad. You know, I've known Ludovic a long time, trusted his view, but the way he said it, as if it was obvious, I know it sounds a little ridiculous, but he's like, you know, when I worked at E-Trade, we didn't call ourselves a fintech in the 90s. Mm. We were a company that traded online. Mm. And I'd never thought I was a fintech guy. And, you know, whether I am or not doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
He said it, it went in my head. And when I left, I literally left that lunch. I came into my wife. I'm like, I think I could do a fintech. And again, no disrespect to the 25-year-olds who are doing fintech. Yeah. But I'm like, I must know at least as much as those guys. And I actually built a crypto exchange 6 years ago, tried to raise money. And everyone told me I was an idiot. And I shut it down. Turns out I was an idiot for shutting it down. So I just had a swing at a few things. And this one stuck. But I think it was that, obviously, if he had said, hey, Ned, go and start a dental practice, I wouldn't have taken his information so seriously because I don't know that. But I think he hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
He just triggered a bit of thought. And honestly, I'm glad he did.
And with you guys, I mean, what, as you jumped out of that conversation and you found a partner, you found a team to work with, how did you sort of traverse or go towards setting up Bamboo? I mean, where did the problem come from and how did you go about solving that problem?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm not, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say this. Actually, I'll say it, then I'll clarify it. So I'm not purpose-driven in the way most people think.
Yeah.
I'm purpose-driven about building a great business. My purpose is work doesn't have to suck. That's the problem I'm trying to solve.
Yeah.
Work, I don't think work should be, oh my God, it's Monday and thank God it's Friday. Mm-hmm. And I have a real big drive to build a great company. Why? Because a great company does great stuff. Mm. What is the problem? The actual problem in the generic term of thinking is saving and investing was not accessible. A young person or a person without cash didn't get access to financial advice or saving money. But they're the people who need it the most. Mm. So you might say, why didn't I do a B2C, like a Nutmeg or a Betterman or a Stashaway? You know, I don't have the digital marketing chops. That's not me, right? Mm. But what I do have is contacts at the banks. I have, you know, I'm older. My peers are decision makers. Mm. And I realized that the financial institutions needed the kind of fintechs, the people to help them keep up with the new wave of these wealth techs, robo-advisors. So the problem is wealth is not accessible. It's just not. Yeah. Today, it's getting more accessible. People can pick up their phone, buy a great portfolio, and save for the future. But that's the problem. I'm solving it, and I'm solving it for the banks. But my true purpose is to build one of the greatest companies in the world to work for.
Okay, let's dive into that. So when you say the greatest companies in the world to work for, tell me more about that.
Do you know who Gary Vee is? Gary Vaynerchuk?
I do. Yeah.
He is, as they say in Britain, he's Marmite, right? No one's ambivalent about Gary, right?
Yeah.
It's a love-hate relationship, right? As you will not be surprised to learn, I love. And he has a phrase. He says he works for his employees. So nobody works for me. I work for them. And the other guy I want to shout out is a guy called Matthias Hello. I work for him at E-Trade. Mm. And he told me one thing. He's like, Ned, my role is to make people want to come to work. So, Richard, like, no one pays you to go on holiday. No one pays you to go to the movies. Why? Because you want to go on holiday and you want to go to the movies. But someone pays you to go to work. Why? Because it sucks, right? Yeah. And that's been the logic. But what if work was great? What if you wanted to go and you got paid? Mm. So I see that my role from that side is to, what can I do at work? Motivate people, encourage people, give them the belief, give them the ability to do what they want. Don't tell them what hours to come to work. Don't put structure around them. Don't put process around them. Don't hire experienced people, hire new people. Always be energetic, always believe, always show the way. And then, you know, the other bit, I should go in and like, the sink's full of dishes, I wash it. They don't wash it, right? Like, you know, Simon Sinek, his thing, leaders eat last, right?
Yeah.
You know, at lunch, they do, right? I think this hierarchy structure of work is debilitating for a lot of people. How many people rush to work to sit in a cubicle and get told what to, like, who was told what to do, right? I mean, put your hand up, audience.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. And a great topic, and sort of stay on this for a bit. I mean, how does that play out from a performance perspective and also a bottom line point of view?
Performance reviews, I'm not convinced by them. I'm really, that doesn't mean...
Well, not performance reviews, because I don't think I'm a believer in performance reviews. Listen, I've been in big consulting firms, and it's pretty, let's say, nasty the way it actually happens. But what I mean is, if you're giving people the freedom of choice, yeah, you're giving them an ecosystem, you're giving them the freedom of choice, how does performance play out? Is it good, bad, in the middle, a bit of a massaging?
Yeah, it's a great point. So obviously it's not strictly quantifiable. There's a qualitative view there, right?
Yeah.
So we call working at Bamboo beautiful chaos, right? Now, chaos isn't always productive, right?
Yeah.
But chaos can be fun, and it's beautiful because we try not to have a rule. We try not to ever shout at each other. We can disagree, but it's respectful. It's fun.
Yeah.
In terms of productivity, maybe a few things to point out, right? I don't tell people what hours to work, right?
Mm.
But people at Bamboo work crazy hard. Like, I wake up in the morning and there's messages on Slack at all hours.
Mm.
There's people working, you know, nobody works 9 to 5 because people, and if they do work 9 to 5, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody, you know, that's the point. I also think people are often quite surprised by how many projects we're doing and how much. I quite often get asked, how did you do all of that? And again, that's not a quantifiable. Are we profitable as a business today? No, we're not. But I think we're getting there pretty soon. And most fintechs are not. But I actually think we're starting to see margins improve as we get better. Mm. Again, not quantifiable, but on Glassdoor, we have almost one of the highest ratings of any fintech. And in 2019, we were rated the best fintech to work at in Singapore by the government of Singapore. So must be something. But it's, you know, it's a great question. It's really hard to say, are we the most productive wealth tech fintech firm? I'm sure we're not, but I'm sure also sure we're not at the bottom.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And yeah, it's all relative as well. And when you're putting this culture in, because we opened up the subject, and I just want to pass it by. How do you go about, because this is a bit of a new culture, right? There's the old way, and there's sort of the Gary Vee way, and the new way, and the Ned way. What are the steps? What is the thinking that you go through as a founder from day one? This is what I want to do. Okay, you're 70, 100 people now, and this is what I need to be doing when it's also 70, 100 people.
Yeah, great. Now, I'm not a big planner, so I don't think I set out with what will it be in 5 years. I think a lot of founders are like that.
Yeah.
But I think there's this, I don't have to overthink it because I always just say what I feel, right? And I kind of have this strong believing in how it works, right? And so how do you set about it? Relentless positivity, right? Like that's number one, right? The other one is only hire for attitude. Don't hire for skills, right? Now, obviously you want to get, if you can get great skills and great attitude, that's fantastic. But my co-founder wrote a piece about us working together, and he said a really important thing. It's critical that the first 6 to 8 people you hire all have the same values, right? And we talk about a few values: humor, humility, honesty, hard work, and positivity, right?
Mm.
If you hire the first 6, 8, 10 people and they all have those same values, when you hire the next person, we're all going to hire the same kind of person, right?
Mm.
And that like attracts like, right? And we grow the firm. And, you know, look, we've had to take some tough decisions. When people don't fit that, we've had to let them go. And it's been tough. You know, nobody likes that, but we do it in the right way. And look, we've definitely had a little bit more turnover recently because the talent market in Singapore is tough. But I think that's incredibly important. The other side is Steve Jobs. You don't hire great people and tell them what to do, right? You let them do what they want. No one at Bamboo will ever have an office, ever. I will sit at the same desk as everyone else. As long as I'm at Bamboo, no one will ever, ever, ever have an office. We'll never close the door. Yep. We'll say it as it is. That's got to be the way, right? And you know this idea of like a town hall meeting where everybody gets together and the bosses talk? Yeah, we do that every Monday and everybody speaks, not just the boss. Every single person, we do it every Monday. Every Friday, we have a quiz. We do meditation. Well, we used to do meditation every day. We have a lunch. Do you ever watch that YouTube? And this sounds super silly, but have you ever seen that YouTube video of the teacher who has a different handshake and remembers it for every pupil in his class? Have you seen that one?
I have seen that, yeah. Yeah, we watch the same things, but freaky. Yeah.
We don't know if that teacher's good at teaching whatever he teaches, English, history, geography, maths. But I bet you those kids love him, right?
Yeah.
That, he's got it, right? Like,
yeah.
And again, it's not that I have a different handshake with everybody, but that's how I'd like to think. That's the Gary Vee way of thinking. Your employees are everything. You work for them. Everything you could do to give them the ability, that's it. And yeah, it's something I'm super passionate about.
I love it. I love it. And just to sort of jump into another lane and just give listeners out there a bit more insights into your tech. Could you sort of walk through maybe a simple case study of how your tech works for, maybe a tech in action case study or simple one of those?
So we're pure B2B and we have customers like HSBC, Standard Chartered, Franklin Templeton, right? We design, build, and deploy saving and investment apps. So what's the saving and investment app? So depending on which region you're in, Nutmeg in Britain, a Betterment or a Wealthfront in the US, a Scalable in Germany, a Stashaway, a robo-advisor. So we have all of the APIs that can do all the steps in achieving that application. So risk profiling, onboarding, portfolio selection, and then all the transactional, buying and selling a fund. So we go to a bank and or they come to us and they want to have that kind of automated saving application. You know, it's generally like a custom build based on our API, 6 months journey of deciding, building. You know, we do everything from the design. We build, we integrate to their core banking systems. Yeah. We put it together. We deploy it in the app store. We connect it to the payment wallets and the transaction. And ultimately, but one magic day, they press the launch button. And in the app store arrives a saving and investment application. No one sees Bamboo, right? Their customer is, you know, you, the man in the street, saving and investing their hard-earned dollars towards their retirement or their kids' education. Nobody would see Bamboo. You know, we're the rails. We're the behind the scenes. It's always got their brand. But that's in action. Our APIs configured together for an institution to help people save and invest. And, you know, we've got a dozen live clients. We've got another 10 or so in production. And, yeah, we want to be the world's best. We want to. And we're actually currently deploying. We've already deployed in America, in Indonesia, in Malaysia, and we're now deploying in Dubai, Saudi Arabia. We deployed in Brazil before, Kenya. We're about to do Germany. Yeah, we're gonna deploy everywhere.
And you mentioned, first deployments across the globe, it sounds like, and also into these big institutions. And I guess you mentioned at the top of the show, you're pretty good at selling. You got the institutional knowledge around that. But how do you go about, in your case, how do you go about getting that demand generation up and running in the first furlong and also constantly pushing it out so that expansion continues as you want it to?
Yeah, look, it is it's a great question because it's a complicated problem. It's a sales problem. It's a product problem. It's I was going to say commitment problem, but maybe I'll take that in the right way. So everyone's heard the phrase, build it and they will come. Let me tell you, no one's coming, not even your friends. You'd be lucky if your family turns up. No one cares about your tech. No one cares about your product. No one's interested. Let's be clear, right? So how do you get it out? I mean, the number one, the simple, relentless. We have done thousands of sales meetings. And I don't mean in the, we've done thousands. Like, we've done thousands. Literal thousands of meetings. And so that's one. Number two is that you leverage connections.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky, you know, being old. All you 25-year-olds out there, one thing you can't beat me at, you can't be my age, and I know more people than you do, so there you go. So I can genuinely call CEOs of big banks, not because I have any ego. Well, I do, but that's a different conversation. It's because, like, I know these guys, right, or these ladies, and I know them, and I can call them, and that's just a privilege of getting older, right? And so that's what. The other thing is, I think many startups call 20, 30. They think they've done a good job if they pitched 50 banks. I mean, actually, I was speaking to a startup the other day. It's like, yeah, I think I pitched like 30 banks. I haven't got anything. I'm like, oh, you pitched 30 this week? They're like, no, 30 since I started. I'm like, you started a year ago. They're like, yeah. I'm like, no, you mean you pitched 30 this week, right? And I was being a bit of a douchebag about it, but I was trying to make a point.
Yeah.
Like, if you pitch 300 and you have a little cry and you're a bit upset that no one bought your product, well, yeah, have a little bit of sympathy, have a cup of tea and get over it. But I honestly think that's the biggest problem. There is just a misunderstanding of how hard it is. And the other last thing is digital marketing content. So I have been overly prevalent on LinkedIn. As you mentioned, Richard, I have my own podcast, my own video series, I post. It's incredibly important. People's perception of you is so important. And I have a team of 6 people who help brand Bamboo, brand Ned. You know, this is not just me. This is a whole team. And that's how I think we've managed to get global.
I love it. And I mean, just in the last part there, because that's LinkedIn, B2B, right? That's the platform. That's the space. You've got to be out there. You've got to be branding. You've got to be talking. And you can't just be talking technical stuff. because people don't sort of connect with technical stuff. They connect with, I think to your point about the school teacher, they connect with you. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. And I've checked out what you guys have done. And I think you're one of the only fintechs that do it. And it's powerful, right? I mean, how does that, I just want to stay on this for a second, because I think it's an important thing for our listeners to understand. That demand engine, that demand generation, let's talk about LinkedIn and video on LinkedIn for a second. How does that transpire to qualified leads coming into your pipe and then later down the line, maybe 4 months or 5 months or 6 months, when you are pitching to, you know, whoever, it could be Credit Suisse, it could be UBS, whoever it is, they actually know you and the sale is a bit easier and the conversion happens. Long question, but great to get your insights.
Yeah, look, absolutely. It isn't certainly video today, deal tomorrow, right? That we all know that, right?
Yeah.
It builds on it on itself, right? Like little pennies in the jar, right? The first one, put the first penny in the jar and it doesn't look like you got any money, right?
Yeah.
You keep, so a couple of key things, right? So I don't know, you may have seen our kind of video series we do. Like it's pretty professional, right? And people say to me, oh, wow, Bamboo must know what it's doing. Hold on a minute, right? Because I can make a nice looking video that looks like Bloomberg, that has San Francisco behind me, has the ticker and everything. All of a sudden, my tech works. Now, again, everybody, my tech does work, but it's the fascinating human psychology, right? If I rocked up with a handheld iPhone, said exactly the same thing, and I was on my couch wearing a t-shirt, people would be like, this guy doesn't know his stuff, even if I said the same words. So, but it's hard to do. We had to learn it. We had to understand it. We started with just little blog posts. We moved on to like newsletters. Then we did a couple of webinars. Then we did podcasts. Now we do this twice weekly, not to let too much the cat out of the bag, but we're about to move it up. We're about to do something extra crazy. So everybody wait for it. I think so. Consistency and quality doesn't really matter if you, of course, content and the quality is important. But if you're a fintech founder of your own company, be it payments, crypto, whatever, you'll understand your subject matter.
Yeah.
But make the quality high, make the consistency all the time. And I have an amazing team at Bamboo, Laura, Danny, Yang, Asman, a range of them who put the effort in. It's not me. Like, honestly, what do I do? I'm just the talking head. I'm the tiny little bit at the top. These guys do everything else. I'm just the lucky guy to sit in front and talk, but I have an amazing... So you need a team. It's not a one-person thing. You need a team.
And how does that... I mean, again, let's just sort of fast forward that demand generation stuff. And obviously it is... It doesn't... It takes a process. It takes a team. It takes a lot of effort. Consistency, you mentioned. But then when you're at the table, when you're, you know, your CRO or your head of sales is at the table with a prospect, are the barriers sort of let down a bit? So the doors sort of half open rather than half shut?
Yes, absolutely. You know, there's kind of this understanding, oh, Bamboo, Like, let's say, Richard, you worked at a bank and you were tasked. So let's say tomorrow you got a job at a bank and they said, hey, Richard, we've decided to use a fintech to help us build a robo. I mean, it doesn't mean you will use Bamboo for sure, but I'm sure you'll call us, right? Mm. You'll at least hear us. So I think when we get in front, there's this idea we've been around. We know what we're doing. We've worked for HSBC and Standard Chartered and Franklin Templeton. And I hear them talking. So you know what the main thing is? Their friends have told them that Bamboo's okay, right? Yeah. Like a good restaurant, right? If your friend said, oh, I went there, it was amazing. So I think it does. When we get to the deal or the table, I think we've already, there's this level of trust, brand, possibly likability that we've worked hard at. And you're right. I think we have a step ahead of our competitors. And it's after 5 years of doing it, it's definitely noticeable.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And as part of this, do you also, this cycle, are you also, it feels like, I mean, I might be wrong, it feels like you're building up some sort of digital community and followers that love you guys and can influence their friends or their colleagues to chat to you guys.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So I think you, just to follow on the end of your last question, I don't think there's been a day in the last 2 years that we haven't got an incoming request to do a demo. We don't even have to do outbound pitches anymore. It's all incoming for us now.
Yeah.
You know, which sounds crazy. Like when I used to sell manure, like nobody phoned me up and said, can I have a bag of manure? I had to call them, right? Whereas today... You know, it's a good, actually, Richard, no one's put it that way. Do we have a digital community? I don't know, right? But you know, maybe we do. Do I think we have a brand? I do. I do think we have a brand. And I think you're right. Like, we do our podcast, we do our video series, and we took a week off last week of our video series because I had a week off because it was my birthday and I'm old. And I took a week off for the first time. And I had a few people going, oh, missed your show. Oh, what happened? Oh, you haven't stopped it, have you? So then, you know what I mean? There must be some people who like it, because I got some people who complained it wasn't there.
Yeah, great. I mean, that's awesome. And as you go through that cycle and as we talk about sales, I mean, from a B2B point of view, I mean, how have you, other than the digital channels, also leveraging your contacts, how have you approached other aspects of the sales funnel and making certain that you guys are actually the thought leaders in the space constantly?
Yeah, like, thought leadership's important. How have we done it? So obviously, like any startup, when you start, your product's sticky tape and string behind, right? You're kind of... Today, you know, wealth tech's new 5-6 years ago, and we're 5-6 years old.
Yeah.
So when it's come to today, I hope this sounds a little good, fine. There's little bamboos out there now, right? So when a big bank is like, oh, I could choose like a new company, oh, bamboo, they know what they're doing. Like, we're here. We're believable. We're thought leaders. We've stood up at conferences. And I think it's just a time. I mean, I don't know how many conferences we've spoke at. I know it's hundreds. I know it's not thousands, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, just not myself, Aki, my co-founder, very lucky. So it's not that I'm not intelligent, but he's extra intelligent, right? He's an incredibly thoughtful guy. And when he stands up, people, you know, these people who don't say much, but when they do, you really listen.
Yeah.
Like, I talk all the time, so people turn off half the time, right? But my co-founder has real thought. And so we have a combination. I talk a lot, so people have to listen. Aki talks a little, but they really want to listen. And then we have 70, 80 people who are doing an amazing job. So I do think we have kind of credentials as thought leaders. I do think, and you know, we're going to be relentless and we're going to be the global leaders at this. Like, I don't have any doubt anymore. Like 2 years ago, it would be like, man, we'll do fine. We have customers globally. I have some of the world's biggest banks using us. We're going out to raise another big chunk of money. Our revenue's increasing. Like, we have all the pieces. It's going to happen. I just know.
Nice, nice. And as you've gone through the cycle and, you know, you guys are obviously going to be raising more money and what have you, how have you approached the big decisions that you've had to make along the way?
Decisions are hard, right? There's no doubt. Again, my co-founder Aki has all the smart stuff. I just repeat what he says. The easiest decision is decision number one, right? But it's also the most telling. Because the minute you take a step in one direction, that informs the next step, right? But it's also the easiest decision because you have no other baggage. You just take a decision. I'm going to go left or right? Left. Okay, so you no longer can go right in the first step, right? Yeah. So today, you know, because I've made millions of decisions and they're all based on the foundations of other decisions, I'm pretty relaxed. So I used to work for a guy, a credit liaison, an American guy, but he spent 5 years as a Japanese monk not speaking. So he did not speak for 5 years. And I remember talking about decision-making. It was like 20 years ago. And he told me something pretty straight. He said, Ned, why are you worried about decision-making? I said, what if I get it wrong? He said, Ned, do you make decisions with good intentions? I'm like, yeah. He said, so what's your problem? If the outcome's wrong or right, it doesn't matter. He said, on the opposite, if you make decisions with bad intentions, it doesn't even matter if it's right. You shouldn't have done it. So go with your gut. Know you're a good person. Make the decision and go. And I'm sure Aki, if he listens to this, will laugh because I keep messaging him like, dude, what should we do? This or that. Like, of course, I like, And then I also let time make a decision. I kind of wait and I wait and I wait. And I hope things will move in the world. And suddenly something just goes, oh, look, the door opened. I walk through it. And if it comes to it and, you know, time tick, tick. And I'm like, what? Oh, and if nothing happens, A or B, A. Tomorrow, B. It's fine.
I like it. It's actually a great, I love that answer. And as you guys continue to move forward, what are you looking at? What factors are you looking at or questions are you as founders and leaders of your business asking yourselves as you go forward and try to dominate the space?
Yeah, look, there's a clear thing in B2B revenue. You've got to get 10 million recurring revenue and above, right? Yeah. We're not there yet, but we're getting close, right? And when you get to 10, you got to get to 50. When you get to 50, you got to get to 100, right?
Yeah.
But it's pretty clear, right? The hardest million is the first million. So we're past that. We're kind of halfway onto the 10, but if we can get to 10, you're on your way. Very few B2B SaaS companies crack 10, right?
Yeah.
10 of recurring. And we'll get there. You know, we're not far away, but we'll get there. So what a decision. What challenges do we give ourselves? Like, that's critical. How do we do that? There's a variety of ways. We get asked quite often to acquire little bamboos, right? Mm. So little companies that have started, yeah, who are struggling, like they come to us and they're like, you've got Franklin and HSBC and Standard Chartered. We don't have any clients, but we've got the tech. Can we kind of come with you guys? And, you know, we considered it like it's definitely maybe a strategy. We can kind of become the home for little fintechs and we can grow that way. Look, it's an idea. The other one is just raise a truckload of money and just hire, 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 right? Like we've raised 15 million so far, so it's not nothing, but yeah, it's not the $50 or $100 other guys have. And,
yeah,
you know, look, if somebody gave me $100, would I dominate the world? Yeah, but that's almost too easy, right? Like that's, you know, to get $100, of course you'd dominate. But yeah, so that's the other thing. We think, the other thing I found is this. I remember the day of the 10 million, and so we raised 15 and in B we raised 10. The minute 10 gets in your account, you think you're a champion. And you're wrong. You're super wrong. It's the most dangerous place you can be because you're complacent. You have money, right? I'm actually a much better leader and a founder when it's super tough. I don't like it either, right? Much better when you got a hustle, right? Like I sleep better when I got a hustle. Yeah. I don't sleep well when I got a lot of money. I don't know why. Like I like a lot of money and I would like a lot of profit. I'm thankful to my investors, but this hey, startup, you raised $1 million. Well done. Yeah. Really? You just couldn't be profitable. Come on. You did not get an A. No company that raised money gets an A. They're always a B or a C, right? Mm-hmm. Shout out to MoneyThor, the fintech in Singapore, profitable from day one, never raised any money, crushed it, did it themselves, right? I love my investors and I'm super thankful, but you know, I'm never getting an A. Mm. If I exit for a lot of money, everyone gets their money back and everyone's happy. Sure. Until then, I'm always a B founder and everyone is who raised money, right? Because you couldn't be profitable. A real business makes money, right? Let's be clear. So, and we're getting there. And then when I get there, I always say thank you to my investors, but I'm like, you helped me get to A, right? To get to be an A-class founder. So that's what drives me. Really does.
And what are the strings, I mean, to profitability? I mean, what are the things that are going through your head to move the needle and get to the A level?
Raise prices. When you're a little startup, it's hard to raise prices because you're tiny, right? No one bargains with Microsoft or Oracle, right? Because it's just the deal, right? But when they were tiny. So number one, prove that our products are worth more money and charge more money. That's important. Number two is I want to pay my people more. I know that sounds counterintuitive to profit, but we need to drive more scale and efficiency from our business and our staff should get more money for that. So we today have 70, 80 people and we're 8, 9, 10 live robos, 10 in production, right? 20. 2 years ago, we had like 50 people and only like 5 robos. So 10 to 1, we're getting better. Yeah. We can deploy more product with less people per product. I got to drive that. Better products, more efficiency. Kind of pay my people more because they can do more, even though that's counterintuitive to profit. And also, you know, raise prices, not because I want my people more, because my product is getting better. We're going to be the world leader in this. And within 12 months, we'll be profitable.
Nice. And listen, as you continue learning, because it sounds like you definitely are on the edge all the time and wanting to learn, listening to Gary Vee and the guys and also the ladies, what podcasts or what books are you reading or have you read in the past or listened to in the past that you think our listeners would benefit from as they go through their scaling journey or even their life journey? Because I think part of being a founder and a CEO is also you're making certain you take life lessons as they come, right?
Yeah. So I don't read a lot. I sadly watch reality TV shows like The Bachelorette on a Saturday, which is embarrassing.
Awesome.
Actually, I've just been watching Married at First Sight. It's ridiculous, but I watch it. But the book that is my favorite is called The Hard Way. Yeah. So it's a collection of short stories by an adventure writer called Mark Jenkins. It's like 12 short stories. So he's an outdoorsman who does like mountain bikes across Mongolia, climbs Everest, you know, just does hard stuff. And he just meets really good people. And there's a phrase in there he has, which I think is life lesson, what I use. So he talks about going on mountaineering adventures, long one, a month long, carry your own stuff, cold, wet, hungry for a month, right? And he said, the teammates I want conform to this. When the going gets tough, when you haven't eaten for 3 days, it's freezing ass cold, your tent's got a hole in it, your gas is out of stove, you've got 4 more days to walk to get out. As a teammate, this is the lesson. When the going gets tough, it is not acceptable to whine. It is acceptable to say nothing, but it is admirable to revel in it. You've got to love the crap. You've got to love it when it's tough. You've got to be that person, no matter what, to smile. If it's cold and you're wet and you're hungry, who wins when you say, I'm cold and I am wet and I am hungry? No one wins, right? No one wins. No one wins. Let's smile. Let's do it. I know it's tough, right? And hey, look, I'm a lucky one, right? I live an economically super lucky life. And people might say, Ned, you're so ridiculous. Like, it's really tough for people. And I understand that. I get it. I'm not saying everyone can smile the whole time. But if you're asking me for founders, anybody who is a founder is ridiculously lucky. The fact that you think you can start a tech company, that you have enough food and shelter and economic freedom to do this, you are super lucky. And my advice is that. Love the hard bits. Never say, oh, that VC didn't call me back. Come on. You know, that's on you. That's not on them. That's on you. When the 150th bank didn't return your email, that's on you. That's got nothing to do with them. That's only on you. And I talk about that a lot. And I think people stare at me and they're like, yeah, whatever. And they walk away and go, yeah, that VC sucks. He never called me back.
Inspiring words, mate. I mean, I love it. I really, really love that synopsis there. And listen, as we log off today, how can people get in touch with you guys? What's the easiest way to do it?
Sure. So on LinkedIn, so I'm Ned Phillips, LPHILLIPS. So Ned Phillips on LinkedIn. We're there. We're pretty relentless on there. On our website is bamboo.co. And hello, I'm Ned@bamboo.co. If you email me, I will reply. Ned@bamboo.co. I love tech, but I love people more. So if you have an idea, you want a job, you want to chat, you want a wealth tech, you want a robo bill, who are you going to call? Let's call us.
Awesome. I feel like I can't remember the story. Who are you going to call? It's in the 80s or something. Who knows? I don't know. But,
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. That's it. Yeah, there we go. Okay, there we go. Sorry. Oh, flashbacks. good. Listen, it's been awesome. I loved our chat today. And listen, I think I'd love to get you back on and talk more about some other, maybe more, other subjects about founding and life and whatever, because there's some nuggets there that can definitely go deep.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, look, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. The listeners might not know this. Last time me and Richton spoke, his two wonderful kids were there in the background beating him on the head with a balloon, and he was a constant professional, basically not flinching while his kids. And it was incredibly entertaining. So if we do a video podcast next time, bring them in with the balloons to entertain us as well.
Definitely, I'll definitely get them in. They're off at school today. Schools are back in London, so ace for that, right? But hey, listen, awesome, and looking forward to getting this live.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah.